to Music Mingle. My name is Isaac.
And I'm Lizzie.
And we're here to talk about music.
Today is part two of our two-part series that goes into public and private teaching. So we're really excited to have a guest with us, Madeline.
Hello!
So just to start out, we wanted to have Madeline talk a little bit about her background and credentials and why we're having her here on our podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really excited. I started playing at the age of two. My mom started me as a Suzuki student in private lessons, and I've been playing ever since then, I guess. I went to BYU and got my undergrad in violin performance while I was there. I started teaching when I was 13 years old, so I was really young when I started. So I taught through high school and I taught through college. And now I've built up my studio since then, and currently I'm teaching, I think it's 61 people every week.
Wow.
So I keep very busy with it, but I have a really good time, and I teach almost exclusively violin with some viola students as well, but just a couple.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
That is awesome. I love hearing one violinist start when they're, like, two, because that was not my experience.
I was on Twinkle Twinkle Little Star for 2 years, so I can't really say too much for 2 years. But it's kind of fun to say you started at two,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. No, it's so fun. Okay, let's get started with some of these questions.
Basically, similar to our first part where we had Megan Thorup on, we had some questions for her, and we have very similar questions we're going to ask you, just so we can compare and contrast and see what your experience is. Our first question is, what role did private teaching play in your personal musical development?
It played a huge role. So like I said, I started really, really young, and so I had a lot of time to develop skills, and it was really nice because it gave me lots of time to, you know, develop my ear and get into ear training, music theory, note reading, technique, and all of that before I got to a point where maybe I would have been playing in ensembles later on. So that was a really big thing for me, was it gave me lots of time. It gave me time to love music too and have lots of exposure to all the great things that music has to offer. It also, like I said before, it just gave me a lot of time to fine-tune my skills with different teachers and guests that I got to work with as I was growing up in camps that I went to. I loved camps as a kid. I really loved those. And yeah, that was the biggest thing, is I would really say that since I was able to start younger, that was the really... And having one-on-one training with different teachers, I think that was really good too, because you get that detailed focus from your instructor.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So in contrast to that then, you mentioned, of course, you have a lot of time in private teaching. What was your public experience like? Like public school teaching, did you have any that impacted your musical development, or was it primarily private? What was the balance there?
So I will admit, I was not the biggest fan of violin growing up. When you start at two, you didn't really decide to be the one to play it. But my mom had seen all of these great things that music had to offer and the ways that it really develops you. And so that was the main reason that she had started me. I am the oldest in my family, and so I didn't get a choice too, because she was like, you're still going to do it. What I was really, really fortunate to have was I had an incredible junior high teacher, actually. And it was my first experience with an orchestra, besides maybe, I think I did a Suzuki camp when I was younger, and so I had been able to play in like a little orchestra there, but my first exposure was in this school orchestra, and I studied with Angela Harmon, and she is amazing. Oh my gosh, I got to take from her when she, I think I was her first year of public school teaching, because she did private teaching and then public school. I'm pretty sure it was the first year, and she is just so fun. If you can ever watch one of her performances, they're nothing like a your typical classical orchestra performance, but they're so fun, and she has a way of bringing music to life. And I think ensemble work on its own, you get that amazing energy that comes from a group of people coming together and playing. But there was something about the way that she did it, and I still don't necessarily know how she did it, and it was just amazing. And it really helped me. I remember that year was when I just fell in love with playing. So I liked it before, and I'd gotten good at it, but I fell in love with playing actually through my public school teacher, and maybe it was just different exposure, but I will forever be indebted to that orchestra teacher, because I'd say she was the main reason that I actually decided to keep going on in music. And so it was very vital for me actually to have that and have such a good quality teacher who cared so much about her students.
And I think with music too, like, community is such a big thing, like being able to play in orchestra and like chamber music, like all of that is so fun. So I'm so glad you had that experience. I also just wanted to like add a little tidbit here. So in one of our earlier episodes, we talk about how you can develop perfect pitch if you study music like really early on. So question, do you have perfect pitch? If not, that's totally okay. That's fine.
So I actually, I listened to this, I watched this YouTube video like 3 days ago because I was like, I'm going to test myself and see if I have perfect pitch. This was literally 3 days ago. It's so funny that this came up. And so I have relative pitch.
Okay.
I knew that before the video that I listened to. But I will say I'm probably, I have to say probably because who knows, I could have messed up. But I usually get the right note or I'm a half step off.
Okay.
So, and anything that's in like a regular range that you play on a violin, I can almost always get correct. Okay. And so like, because the Suzuki method, you only learn by ear at the beginning.
Yes.
And that is a really great skill to have. It's really, really good. But no, I don't have perfect pitch. I really wish I did sometimes. But you know, I do think when you're a teacher, it might be kind of good to not have perfect pitch.
Yes.
It's a little less painful if you hear a C sharp that's a little flat. Like, it's not, I feel like it's not as painful to hear. I can kind of handle it a little bit.
No, thanks for answering that. Totally a random aside, but that was just an interesting study that we talked about earlier that said if you start music before the age of 6.
Yeah, something like that.
That you have a really high likelihood of having perfect pitch.
Dang. So. That's really unfortunate.
Sorry. You just didn't work out. Well, it sounds like you're really close, though. Like, I was gonna say, the fact that you can kind of tell, like, that's close.
A lot of people that I talk to think I have perfect pitch, and I always say, if you counted perfect pitch in, like, an open G on a violin up to, like, maybe a high C above the staff, or maybe up to, like, an E or an F, I can almost always get that right.
Yeah.
But right when you go into the extremes, especially low notes, because I just don't play those notes, so they're not in my ears, I sometimes will try to, like, jump them up the octaves and try to sing it, and then, but I always know that I know what a C sounds like, and I know in my head I'm comparing it to a C, and I'm either, like, playing a scale in my head, or I know what an A sounds like, or stuff like that. I can just pull that out of thin air, and so I know that I'm always comparing it, so it would be relative pitch, but.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting that that is definitely a developed skill, though, like something that you are familiar because you've developed it, because it's worked hard. You definitely worked hard on it. You're not just naturally born with that.
Nope.
Cool.
Okay, so next question. What is your role in your students' musical development? Like, what do you feel like your job is as a private teacher?
The thing that I always tell a student when they come in, especially I get a range of students. I teach kids, like little kids. The youngest I've ever started someone, I think, was 2 or 3. Or I'll get people who maybe were in school orchestra for a year, decide that they're really liking the instrument and they want to come in and have private lessons, which is a totally different circumstance. But thinking of maybe the people who come in for lessons after having already played in an orchestra, I always tell them that orchestra teachers are amazing because there are so many people you have to keep track of all the time. And so their job is to work on the ensemble and to create that experience. And what my job is to fine-tune everything. Because I have the time to give detailed attention to each individual student.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important because those two go hand in hand. Because if you have one without the other, then I think you don't get the most enriching experience in music, in my opinion. And so I always tell them that. I say, my job is to help fine-tune your skills. I do think that I can help them a lot with how to interpret music too and how to be more musical. I think that's a really important thing. I do think that can definitely be taught in orchestras too, obviously. But I do think that, once again, I just like that I can kind of get into the nitty-gritty of everything, that I have time available to do that. The other thing that I really work on with my students personally, actually, is teaching them how to be independent thinkers themselves, though. So they don't like me that much for this, but I all the time will be like, they'll ask me a question, I'll say, well, what do you think about it? Like, well, what do you think that is? Do you think it's that note? Why do you think it is or not? Or anything like that. Or I was just teaching a lesson today where we were working on bow speed, and I was like, well, how much bow do you think you need if you want to play a piano? And they're like, I don't know. And I was like, well, think about it for a second. Test it out. Try it. And it's really fun to get students to a point where they're learning how to discover things themselves. I like to be more of an aid than anything. I don't like to tell my students what to do all the time. At the beginning, I do have to do that because they're just learning, and so my job is to instruct them. But as they become more independent thinkers, I think that's where their own sound starts to come out, their own style. And I don't ever want my students to be carbon copies of me. I want them to figure out what they like and how to be like individual musicians. And I think I get like a great opportunity to be able to help bring that out of them.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's kind of funny because my students sometimes will be like, I will ask them to play a piece, and then they'll mm-hmm. be like, okay, should I start? Like, can I play now? Like, and I'm like, why are you asking? I just asked you to play this piece. Like, there's so much I feel like the children or kids are, or even teens are kind of trained to be, like, in school. It's like, you raise your hand, and, like, you do this stuff. And I like the respect, like, the teacher-student respect, but I do feel like I like that idea of you can kind of choose how you want to play this. Or I even try and work on sometimes, like, okay, I know that there's a fingering written in here, but, like, maybe you like to go to second position more than third position or something, if it's a more advanced student. I think there's so much room for that, that sometimes students aren't getting, like, in school as much, which is fine. Like, I think there's a kind of a time and place for everything, but I like that idea of creativity and allowing the student to kind of be their own teacher in a way, or trying to teach them how to teach themselves eventually.
Well, because in the end, unfortunately, I always tell my students, I say, when you're gonna ditch me someday, when you go off to college, or, you know, moving on. And I, like, jokingly, I'm like, oh, this is so sad. Which, actually, I am very sad when they all leave. Yes. But, because I really do love them. But I always tell them, I want you to be able to take music with you for the rest of your life. And I don't want you to be so dependent on me to tell you how to do this. So then when you are on your own, you don't know how to maybe learn something. Learn how to play something. Learn how to read notes. You know, when I'm trying to teach a student how to do their, like, how to play their notes, I used to let them write in their finger numbers, and now I don't let them when they're very first learning, because I've learned that they aren't figuring it out themselves. Of course, later on when they do shifting, they definitely write in fingerings, or else it doesn't go very well.
Yes.
But I do think that's a big thing. Like, I'll have students that come in with maybe a fingering or a bowing or something that I don't like myself. But if it sounds fine, then I just don't say anything. Yeah. And I'm like, I wouldn't choose to do it like that. But just because that's how I like it doesn't mean you'll like it the same way. And I tell them that when I'm thinking more of my advanced students. Because you watch a YouTube video of a certain piece and every single person does it differently. Which I think is really great. And I think that's why some of this music has stood the test of time, is because it has been reinterpreted. So when a student comes in, I always tell them, I say, okay, well, if you can make it sound good, go ahead. You can do that fingering. But sometimes I'll be like, I don't want to hear a slide, though. if I hear stuff that's going to distract from the musical idea, then we need to change it. But that's usually the only reason I'll change something for them.
Yeah.
I have a question that it's not on the list that we gave you ahead of time. Okay. But I have just an off-the-riff question. My question is, how do you develop yourself professionally? Because I think about, you know, a high school teacher would go to, like, a professional development conference or something, or they would counsel with their colleagues, or their principal would observe them and give them notes and stuff like that. As a private teacher, like, you don't necessarily have that structure above you that forces you to, like, grow and develop. But how do you seek to develop yourself professionally as a private teacher?
I do think part of it has been trial and error, I will admit. Totally. I mean, when you're starting at 13, you're not necessarily, you didn't have amazing training and teaching or anything. I was just experimenting at that point. And so I do think a lot of what I've learned is from that, actually, surprisingly. And there have been teachers that have let me go and observe them. And I really liked that because I have a mindset of, I have a toolbox of all of these skills or ways that I can teach something. And then depending on the kid is what I'm going to use. So if you sat and watched a day of teaching for me, you would see that I honestly probably don't treat every student the exact same way because every student needs something different. And I think it's really important to be individualized to each one of them. And so I will learn from basically any source that I can. So then I have 10 different options of how to teach one thing, and then I can try and see what works for each kid. So I've done different types of training because a lot of it is, you know, your own experience. And one thing that was different for me than I think a lot of people is I grew up with maybe teachers that had a little bit of a different focus sometimes. And so I had some technical things that didn't get addressed when I was younger. Not everything, but like I did have a few things that were getting in my way a little bit of my playing. And I ended up getting really awful overuse injuries when I was in high school. And when I switched to this one teacher, his big focus is he was like, you need to get all of this set up, all of your posture set up, all of this fixed. And so then I could replay and be able to play because I had gotten to a point where I had a doctor telling me there was a good chance I was done and that I wasn't going to be able to play anymore because I had messed up kind of my arm so much, especially. And I had to relearn how to play pretty much. It was like a reset. And I remember this teacher telling me, he was like, I wish that I had been the one to start you because how good would you be at this point if you didn't have to deal with resetting everything up? And I told him right to his face, I was like, I'm glad I didn't. Like, I'm glad I didn't start with you because I understand how this all works. So when you start really young, you don't remember anything about how you started. You don't remember how to set up a bow hold. I've really had to put myself in my students' shoes when I set up a bow hold because for me it's second nature, but for them it's not. It's something really unfamiliar and weird. And so that was a really big thing for me, I would say technically, for my students, is like how to set everything up. That was a game changer for me. I also have gone through and done some Suzuki certifications, and I've really enjoyed those. I've really enjoyed learning how to pick apart a piece like that. And when I go up to the Intermountain Suzuki String Institute in Utah, and you get to go and observe teachers all week too. So it's really fun to go and observe the classes. So I've learned a lot from those. And then I love this teacher. Her name's Elizabeth Fadley. She's out in, I think she's teaching pre-college for Manhattan School of Music. And she does these pedagogy days. And it's just this online, you pay, I don't remember how much it was, but you just pay for the day and it's all on Zoom, and she has all these different classes that go on all day, but then you get all the Zoom links after. So I'll admit, I paid for this last one and then I couldn't make it to any of them that day, but I have these recordings. And one thing that I love that she does is she's really big into making music magical all of the time. And she has like just this like loving nature about her that I really look up to, and so that's a really big thing for me. So circling back to your original question, I just kind of pick and choose different things. I read a lot of books. I think teaching is better when it's observed, but I definitely think that some of the books I've read, especially learning about like childhood development and working with people, like that kind of stuff, I've enjoyed reading books on that too. And I do spend a lot of my free time just studying music or watching videos, watching master classes. I will take pretty much any information I can get that's going to make me better. I think you're always learning and there's always more to learn. So
that's awesome. Thanks. Yeah, that's super insightful. Thank you for your words.
So for our next question, we kind of talked about like what your job is as a private teacher. What do you feel like you want your students to get out of teaching up until the time that, you know, they have to leave you?
I know, the saddest day of my life. I do think technical skills are a really important thing, because there's so much that goes on with that, that if you can set someone up, I always say my goal is to set my students up for success, and that's what I want. So whatever it takes to get them to their goals, whatever that looks like for them. So I think technical skills are a really big thing. So just basic setup, basic understanding of how the instrument works, how to play, how to achieve maybe certain dynamics or styles, all of that. I also think musical skills, super important. Learning how to express. I think there's something really special about music where it helps us feel human. And sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the logic of life and all of these day-to-day things that it's just really special to learn how to enjoy music and learn how to play with that kind of a heart. And then the other thing that I've thought a lot about is I feel like half of the time I am teaching music, but I feel like I'm teaching my students different life skills and teaching them how they should act in maybe the community or in the world or how they can make a difference. One thing that I love is Suzuki's, I'm gonna get this wrong, I don't remember exactly what it is, but he said something along the lines of, I'm not trying to create world-class musicians, I'm trying to create good people. And I really resonated with that the first time that I heard that, because I think it's really easy to get caught up in, you know, music has to be perfect, and we need to make sure that our playing sounds exactly like a recording. But when I have students come in, I remember I had this cute little, how old was she? 5, I think. She was playing, what piece was it? Oh, I don't even remember what it was. Maybe it was Etude, I think. And Etude in the Suzuki books is a hard piece. That's a hard one. And she all of a sudden just figured out a little bit of it. And this doesn't quite have to do with musical things, but she just figured out part of it. And she ran up to her mom after. I cried during this lesson. She ran up to her mom and she was like, Mom, I can do hard things. I can do hard things. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's what it's about. I really think in the end, that's what it's about. Because really, not everyone who does music is going to go into it professionally. And I think I had to realize that that's an okay thing, because music is such an enriching thing for your life that whatever level a student gets to, it's going to bless them. And I think that's a really important thing to remember. And I think that does, I will say, sorry, that kind of went away from your question, but I think that with public school teaching can help with students. I think they go hand in hand when it comes to that. But I do think there's something really special about music, how it helps people realize that we're all just human and we're all just trying to figure things out. And I think you can connect a lot of music to life with that. So.
Yeah, I love that. And it's interesting because when we did our part one, Megan talked about that as well, that like she wants her students to go into the communities and like contribute. And I think that that's such a cool way to use music to like better the community and to like also help students to feel confident in themselves. I think that was one of the biggest reasons I loved my private teaching experience, was because I felt like I was not finding my worth in music, because you know, that's always a tricky route to go down. But to find my worth in what you were saying is, like, I can do hard things, and I can learn things, and I can create, like, beautiful music. Like, finding how, like, your stamina as a human and, like, also the things that you're capable of. I think there's so much to be learned when you're learning, like, technique and musical things in private lessons.
Well, and especially with that, I'll say especially for string playing, it's not the prettiest sounding thing at first. Yes. It really isn't. And it's really, I think, I always tell my students, I feel like playing a string instrument really teaches you how to develop grit, because you're not going to sound good for a while. You can sound okay, but really learning how to perfectly balance your bow weight and your bow speed and your sounding point to get beautiful tone that's ringing all the time, that takes a really long time to get to a high level, and to master it is really hard. I still work on that every single day I play open strings, just because it's so detailed and has to be balanced out perfectly, that it's really, I always say anyone who gets to a high level playing it's really, really impressive because the amount of grit that it takes, I'd say with any instrument or, you know, any high level of anything, it takes so much grit. And I think that's such a good life skill to learn, how to persevere through different things that happen in life.
Music really is the best place to make mistakes, right? Like, if you got to learn those lessons of, I am not perfect, messing up on violins, probably a great place to start learning that lesson. I love that. Thanks for sharing.
Okay, I'm curious, this kind of goes along with a previous question that we asked about, like, what do you feel like you want your students to get out of it? But I have kind of two parts to this question. First of all, what are your students, like, working toward? Like, is it usually your studio recitals? Are you helping them, like, audition for orchestras in the area or school orchestras? Or, like, what are you wanting them to accomplish, like, maybe in a semester or whatever?
Oh, it just depends on the kid. Okay. It really does. So I have someone taking an orchestra audition next week. I have some doing auditions tomorrow. Allstate Music just came out, so some of my older students are working towards that. I try to give them a lot of performance opportunities myself, too. And so, like, we're getting ready for a recital next month. I do 3 to 4 a year of just, like, studio recitals. And then sometimes I'll get some of my students together to go play at rest homes, too. So there's, like, a lot of different things that they can do. But I think it depends on the season, because there's, I mean, different orchestras. School orchestras, sometimes they'll come in with music where they need help with it. Luckily, I can usually get my students to a point where if they started a little bit before school orchestra, they usually don't need much help, and they can usually do all of it on their own. But my students do a festival, too, where they go and get judged and get comments from other teachers too. So that's usually what our winter time is spent preparing for, and then I usually try to do my recitals around them to give them performance practice. So kind of different things all year round, I guess. For my younger kids, it's just our studio recitals and maybe the rest home performance if they're interested in it. And then as they get older, orchestra gets involved, festivals, like auditioning for music festivals or Allstate or different orchestras. So
that's awesome. So the second part to my question, you've kind of answered a little bit, but, like, what do you feel like your role is as a private teacher in a community? And you've kind of touched on this with, like, playing in rest homes or auditioning for different orchestras around or public school orchestras, but what do you feel like private teachers' roles are in a community, like any private teacher or yourself?
I think first off, our job is to help bring beautiful music to the community through different performances. I've really wanted to have my students do, like, a performance in the park for our city. I think that would be really fun.
Yeah.
I've really loved rest home performances. I think that's been a big deal. They've really loved that, the people at the rest home and my students. And I think a really, really big one, I've talked to a lot of my friends who are public school teachers, is we kind of work hand in hand. And maybe not where we're actually communicating with each other, because some of the local orchestra teachers, I don't sit and talk with them ideas or, like, anything like that. But if I have a successful studio where I have kids that are coming up and can play really well, it helps the orchestra program. Yeah. And if we have a great orchestra program, you have kids that are motivated to take private lessons too. So I do think those things work hand in hand, and both those together are going to better the community because you're getting more music out there.
Yeah.
More music equals a better community.
Yes.
Right? I love that. Thank you. Our next question for you is, how many of your students go on to study music? Like, how much of that has to do with your teaching, maybe? And do you see a direct correlation between the students you teach and the amount of them that go on to study music in college? Maybe, like, have a major or a minor in music in the future.
What I've found is my students who take lessons all the way through high school, because high school honestly is the time where you have to decide what you want. You don't have to decide what you want to do with your life, obviously, but you do have to start picking and choosing, because I do feel like with a lot of families, kind of just trying everything out while they're growing up, and then you see they start to lean towards a few things. And I do think it gets to a point where if you want to be really good at something, you do have to dedicate a lot of time to it. So you have to decide what that looks like for you. Like, for me, I quit everything to do music. That's how it was for me. I stopped all of my sports that I was doing, and I just did music, and I don't regret that at all. I loved it. And I have found, though, that my students who go all the way through high school and take lessons, first off, they're usually very diligent workers. And so they have lots of options of things that they can do, which is really amazing because I do think that music instills that hard work and that work ethic that you have. And so they can be successful in any area that they want to. Most of my students have decided to go on to other career paths, and I 100% support that because I think it's great. And the thing that I love the most is especially those students, they never let music go, though. So almost every single one of them plays in their university orchestra or finds a community orchestra, plays with friends. I get to hear back about all of it. They'll still come in randomly after they've graduated and ask for a lesson every once in a while, which is my favorite thing ever. But most of them have decided to take a different route. But I actually just had a student maybe a month ago or something. I've had a couple actually who were like, I really want to do this seriously. And I'm like, okay, if you want to do this really seriously, this is what it takes. Because I also am big on being very real with my students so they understand what expectations come with what they want. So I usually try to feel out, you know, do they seem like they'd want to do this professionally? And some of them, they really just love it and they want to have a good time with it. And I have some, as they're starting to get older, where I can tell that if they stick with it and they decide they really love it, that they could definitely have a career in it. And I've had a few tell me, they're like, I really want to do this. And so I'm like, okay, let's do it. Let's get this done. And it's been really great to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, very well said. I love that you and, well, you and Megan both have a very similar approach to that. And you both said very similar things about, you know, not all your students go on to study music, and it's like a very small portion of students actually go on to make it their career, right? But that's not the point per se of both types of music teaching. Public and private teaching doesn't need to be make it or break it. You're going to be famous in this, you know? It's going to be concrete skills that benefit them and benefit the community around them. So very well said. Thank you for that.
Thanks.
Yeah, so just kind of as a wrap up to all of these great questions, thank you again for being here and talking to us. Is there a need for music teachers in this area or just around the world? Like, do you feel like there's a need for teachers, or do you feel like that's kind of the spot's been filled?
I think that there are so many more people that do music than we've realized. I think I've seen that a lot as I've had people reach out for lessons. I realize, okay, maybe not everyone sticks with it, but a lot of people have interest in it. And so I say you can't ever have enough teachers, honestly. There are so many people that want lessons and want to learn. And I think what we need is people who are really passionate about it, though. I think that's really important. I was talking to a parent, and we were just talking about the importance of teachers, that they really, in general, not even just music related, but in any area, teachers make or break a lot of things for a kid especially.
Yeah.
And even just their influence or anything, right? And I think that if we had maybe people who, anyone who's coming in that is interested in teaching, is if you have that energy and that passion, it feeds off onto those kids. And if they can feel it, they get that same energy. It's really fun. Like, you can tell in a lesson when me and a student are getting really excited about something and seeing, like, oh, they accomplished it. Or you're running around the room jumping up and down because you're celebrating that they finally got that shift in tune.
Yeah.
And you're so excited. And so I think to anyone who's interested in maybe private teaching or public teaching, is having that passion for it, though, and trying to instill that same passion in other people, because we want that to keep going forever, is that love for music.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing and for answering all of our other questions. It's been such a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Music Mingle, and thanks for sharing your thoughts with the world.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to this episode of Music Mingle. We hope you enjoyed it. Feel free to follow us and like the podcast. Leave us a rating if you so desire. And join us next time on Music Mingle.